courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Republicans appear to eke out a victory in a special House election in Ohio on Tuesday. But is that good news or bad for the GOP in November? We'll break down that race and the other election results from Tuesday's big primary day and tell you what they tell us about the midterm contests. I'm Paul Gigot. Welcome. And I'm here to talk about this with our Potomac Watch columnist, Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello.
So the race isn't over in Ohio. Troy Balderson's leading by something like 1,600 votes with about 8,000 provisional and absentee ballots still to be counted. So Democrat Danny O'Connor could win, but it's unlikely given the mix of the votes still to be counted and where they're from. So it's likely that Balderson will keep the seat for Republicans, at least until the election in November. This was a special election to replace Republican Pat Tiberi. But the narrowness of this race, Kim, and the contours of it and the internal details don't suggest very good news for Republicans other than the victory. I mean, the narrowness of it suggests to me that the trends that we've seen in the course of the last few months are continuing. Enthusiastic Democrat turnout up, Republican turnout mediocre. And I think that, I mean, it's getting to be a cliche, but it's a warning for Republicans about November.
Yeah. It is a warning in particular that they have a suburban problem. And this race encapsulates what that issue is. If you look at the returns and how they came in, you know, this is a sort of suburban area around Columbus in Ohio. And Franklin County is the bit that encompasses most of the suburbs. And the Democrat there, Danny O'Connor, did incredibly well. The only reason Troy Balderson is ahead is because he did get some turnout in more rural areas like Delaware County. The problem, though, is if you look at the overall numbers, Republicans are just way underperforming in all of these areas. The former representative for the district, Pat Tiberi, he got 57% in Franklin and 72% in Delaware the last time he ran. Balderson got 35% of Franklin County and 54% in Delaware. And so if you look at this and you replicate it across the country, these are the districts that the Republicans need to keep if they are going to keep control of the House. There was an enormous amount of money that went into this, and can they replicate that to eke out wins everywhere? That seems pretty hard to fathom.
Yeah, if you look at the county by county vote, it looked like Balderson underperformed what Pat Tiberi did in every single county in 2014. So fewer Republicans turned out for him in every single county the last time there was a midterm election or an election without a president on the ballot. The district, the Charlie Cook, the prognosticator and analyst of congressional elections, has this district at a +7 in terms of Republican trend. So if you look at it that way, it would suggest that the Democratic share of the two-party vote should be about 43%. It looks like Danny O'Connor will get 49.5. So this, again, continues the trend that Democrats are outperforming what should be their partisan vote totals in every single special election we've seen so far. Whether or not that continues in the autumn, you have to think that it will. So Republicans have their work cut out for it. Another sign, I would say, Kim, is that there are about 70 seats that Republicans hold now in the House that are less Republican than this Ohio seat. And that suggests that those seats are probably, most of them, probably going to be contested and maybe in play here in the midterms. And there's only 23 seats the Democrats need to pick up.
Yeah, if you look at that Ohio race again, too, Troy Balderson, as you mentioned, maybe is up by 1,700 votes, about 1,600. It'll probably be less by the time all the ballots are counted. To get to that point, the National Republican Congressional Committee spent $1.3 million, and the Congressional Leadership Fund, which is the top House GOP super PAC, spent $3.2 million. They're not going to be able to do that in every single race. It's just literally financially impossible. You look at the second quarter numbers, 56 House incumbent GOP members were outraised by their Democratic competitors in the second quarter. And that is one of the reasons why these seats are in play, why so many of them are, because it's a measure of enthusiasm. Democrats really do want this election. They want to take back the House. And it's another foreboding sign for Republicans, not just how many are in play, but the fact that they are struggling financially and that their resources are going to be very strained. They're going to have to pick and choose some places, and that's still not going to be enough probably to allow them to retain control.
Right. So if you're a Republican incumbent who's typically won relatively safely, and so you haven't been out raising a lot of money, you may not be the beneficiary of these larger PAC funds if the polling looks like you're going to go down. So you're going to have to raise your own money. And if you haven't, you're going to be in trouble. Now, another sign of trouble for the Republicans was in Washington State, which, of course, is a Democratic-leaning state, certainly at the statewide level. But the Republicans do hold some House seats, and three of them in particular were up, showed signs in the race on Tuesday of trouble. They have jungle primaries in Washington, which means that all of the candidates from any party run in one single primary, and the two top vote getters get on the ballot at the in November. And three seats that Republicans hold, two incumbents and one open seat, Republicans showed weakness by getting well under 50% of the vote in the contests. And Kathy McManus Rogers, in particular, Kim, a member of the House leadership, she has a seat in Spokane, and she barely – I mean, she's, 500 or 600 votes ahead of the Democrat, the leading Democrat in that seat. And that's – and at 47% of the vote, that suggests she's going to have to fight really hard to keep that seat in November. She's a member of the leadership.
Yeah, and Kathy McMorris Rogers, she's also a 7-term incumbent, barely ahead. Now, they will both match up again in the same two competitors, her and Lisa Brown, who is the Democrat, in November. But again, she only came up with 47% of the vote. And you look at some of the other races in the state there, one of the big ones that people tend to watch, it's always a very competitive district, is Washington's 8th district. And that's where Dino Rossi, who is running as a Republican, he only, too, got just 47% of the vote. And there's yet one other district, 3rd district, where Jamie Herrera Butler got 55% of the primary back in 2016, but only barely over 40 on Tuesday night. And her Democratic opponent was only just a couple of points behind her. So, again, these are the suburban districts that Republicans need and need to win a little bit, but they need to be doing a little bit more comfortably than they are.
Kim, I got the saw the Dino Rossi vote at 43%, not 47, which would be even weaker if that's the case. Maybe we both saw different information, but either case, it's a weak result. We're talking about the Tuesday elections, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
Courage, I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Drive time, gym time, anytime. Podcasts from the Wall Street Journal. Check out all our shows at wsj.com/podcasts. That's wsj.com/podcasts.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Kim Strassel. We're talking about the Tuesday election results and what they tell us for November. Kim, of course, the President of the United States wasn't on the ballot anywhere, but he is taking credit for Troy Balderson's win in Ohio, tweeting that before he went into campaign on Saturday night, Balderson was trailing in the early vote by something like 2-1. But of course, he was expected to be trailing in the early voting, given the contours of the race and what usually happens. So Trump is, I think, overestimating his influence here in turning a race around. He claims that they turned it around by 27, 28 points. We don't know how much he did, what the determining factor was for a lot of voters, and I think it's probably true that he helped to increase a Republican turnout, particularly where he's more popular in some of the rural districts. But of course, a lot of the Democratic motivation to begin with is anti-Trump, especially in a place like Franklin County. That's the old seat that John Kasich, the governor, used to hold. And Kasich endorsed Balderson at the end of the race. So, of course, Kasich's people are saying he's responsible for Balderson winning. I do think that what this race shows is what the big thing is your point about the suburban problem. There are college-educated Republicans. There are women Republicans. There are independents who like the results of Trump's policies but don't like his persona and the way that he handles himself and speaks as president. And they are less enthusiastic about turning out to vote for Republicans.
Yeah, well, you saw that in the numbers. They actually turned out to vote for Democrats, and we saw some returns for that. I have spoken to a lot of Republicans this morning. Let me tell you what the flip side is. This is the counter argument that they would make, okay, that the president, the White House would probably make, or more optimistic Republicans. They'll say, okay, yes, these are all really close. But if you look at the special elections that we've had, which people say are often an indicator for how things are going to go, you had four of them last year in Kansas, Georgia, Montana, South Carolina, and the Democrats lost all of them. And they've lost Ohio tonight. Their one victory was in Pennsylvania, where Connor Lamb won a special election. And so this shows that, yes, it's going to be close, but in these dogfights, we can hold on. And the reason we can is in part because the White House strategy is to believe that you don't necessarily change the minds of those suburban voters. And what you need to do is instead drive turnout in rural areas. This is why the president is out giving his big rallies. And this is going to be the saving grace of a lot of Republican candidates. They would also note, too, that, you know, this special election, dog days of August, not many people were paying attention, that they'll be in better shape when their real base is back and focused in November. These are their arguments that they make. I think that's optimistic. But if you talk to someone, they think that the president's strategy is actually working, that you go out and the only way that you combat is to gin up enthusiasm among your core supporters and drive up those numbers in rural areas, and then you've got a shot. So that's the flip argument, and you can now take it apart.
Well, it obviously, I guess, depends on – it assumes that the Democratic motivation and intensity is already baked in, that every Democrat who is going to come out is already going to come out. So Trump's appearance in your district or his injection into the race at every stage, at every day, which, of course, the media will play up, every comment, every attack, every false statement they will play up. That argument that you laid out assumes that that will have no effect on Democratic turnout. I don't know. Will it? It's going to be fascinating to watch. If Trump casts this election as a referendum on Trump, he's agreeing with Democrats who also want to make it a referendum on Trump. So it's fascinating to see where both sides think that's their best bet. And of course, Donald Trump isn't on the ballot. And here's one other factor, Kim. Neither is Hillary Clinton. And having her as a foil, I think, and as an exceptionally, as we now have seen, we know, an exceptionally weak candidate for president, mattered a lot to Donald Trump's victory in 2016. And the question is something called the Trump Coalition, can that coalesce and carry Republicans to a House majority in the absence of Hillary Clinton?
Well, and also I think the question is, too, about resources. We were talking about the money side of it, but President Trump is one man. He cannot show up in all of these 72 districts at the last moment and try to rally a base. And it is the House that matters. Now, we have seen him show up at a couple of places to help out in House districts, but most of his attention has been focused on big statewide rallies that really are more focused on the Senate races. But again, if this is all about him, every one of these districts has their own issues. You can potentially show up at a couple and try to just gin up enthusiasm, but it's not likely to be able to be translatable across the great swath of districts where Republicans are having trouble.
Let's talk about a couple of the other outcomes on Tuesday, one of which is Michigan, the Michigan primaries. And if you look at the Michigan governor's primary, Democrats nominated Gretchen Whitmer, who is a career state representative. She was the mainstream Democrat in the race and beat back a couple of candidates from the left, including one supported by Bernie Sanders. So she enters in strong shape. There were against Bill Schuette, who was the state attorney general, beat the lieutenant governor, Brian Kelly, comfortably in the Republican primary. But here's an interesting statistic that I looked at. Democratic turnout in the governor's primary, Kim, was 136,000 voters larger than Republican turnout. And that is, both were contested, so you can't say that one was a cakewalk and the other wasn't. And I think that bodes ill for Mr. Schuette in November, particularly when you think that he won over Kelly in part by wrapping himself around Donald Trump. Trump endorsed Schuette. And if you look at the most recent Marist poll on Michigan, Trump's approval rating is under 40% in Michigan.
Yeah, well, Democrats are playing this very smart. They're not just enthusiastic, but there has been some talk, obviously, about the split on the Democratic side between more mainstream candidates and their progressive candidates. And one thing that was notable about yesterday's vote is that they, by and large, did not go for the progressive, riskier candidate. They went for the people who are most likely to win and give Republicans a real challenge. So you saw that in Michigan, as you noted, there was a Bernie Sanders, Ocasio-Cortez endorsed candidate, a doctor, El Sayed. He lost. In fact, he didn't just lose. He got trounced. In Missouri, they had endorsed Cori Bush. She lost. There was another race in Washington State where they had a candidate they were pushing, that person lost. And in all of these cases, Democrats, not only was turnout a lot higher, but they picked the person that really is going to give the best run for their money. And Republicans should be concerned about that as well, because I think they'd been betting some that you were going to get some candidates that were very fringe, sounded good to progressives, but not states overall. And that has not ended up happening.
Always good not to count on the suicide of your opponent when you're in a political contest. The other race worth mentioning, I think, is the Kansas governor's race, where Kris Kobach, who is the Trump-endorsed Secretary of State, has made a career out of focusing on voter fraud and on immigration control. And he is a 191-vote lead over Jeff Collier, who's the governor, sitting governor, because he took that position after Sam Brownback resigned to take a job in the Trump administration. So that's very close, and that's going to be determined, it looks like, by votes in Johnson County, which is the county on the Kansas City side of Kansas City, the metroplex there. And Kobach is from Kansas City, from Johnson County. Typically, that's a suburban area that is not thrilled with Trump. It's going to be interesting. I think that this, if Kobach prevails, Kim, I may be wrong, but I think he even in that heavily Republican state, he gives Democrats a chance to pull an upset.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, people are also paying attention to the fact that this was a Trump endorsement. And so everybody is watching to see whether or not he pulls this off, the kind of anti-establishment candidate that Trump backed. Or will this be the one race that Trump played heavily in and, in fact, doesn't come out on top with? But this could be important, again, for the governorship in the state. One other race that I think that's worth mentioning, because it was a bit of good news for Republicans yesterday, was in Missouri, where Josh Hawley, who is the attorney general in the state, very handily won his primary. He defeated 10 other Republicans to challenge the sitting Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill. He's a real up-and-comer in the party. There had been a whole lot of mud flung at him by McCaskill and outside groups trying to beat him up because they knew he was going to be her strongest challenger, and he did prevail, and he prevailed pretty handily. And that is some good news, and I think we're seeing that a little bit more in the Senate, where the dynamic of the races are different. Obviously, Democrats have a lot of seats up, and there are some decent challengers this year on the Republican side who are making some headway.
Yeah, I count the Republicans having a chance to pick up as many as 4 seats from Democratic incumbents: Florida, Missouri, Indiana, and North Dakota. One or two other possibilities on the outside, but those are the 4 main ones. On the other hand, they have a chance to lose seats in Nevada, Arizona, and Tennessee. So the Senate even is, I think, very much up for grabs, though less so than the House. All right, Kim, thank you very much. We'll be back, and thank you all for listening. We'll be back later in the week with another edition of Potomac Watch.